because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsinite summary of a very, very busy week in the Capitol. J.R., Governor Walker, sixth State of the State message.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He highlighted several themes, but let's focus on three of them. A strong economy, education, our past reforms are working, so let's have a few more, and the listening strategy. Okay. I'm curious, J.R., there is one thing that he said, and it was so important he said it twice. So let's listen to the governor's quote, giving a summary of how, in his words, good things are.
There are more people working in Wisconsin than at nearly any point in our state's history. State finances are stable. Our school students are doing well overall. College tuition is frozen. And property and income taxes are down from 2010. The Wisconsin comeback is real.
No surprises in that overview statement, JR? The Wisconsin comeback is working?
No, you also heard another part. I mean, he talked about a media that's obsessed, to paraphrase him, with these mass layoff notices. Because Walker has this issue with the perception of the economy in the state that the unemployment rate is low. I think it ticked up by 1/10 of a point.
It went to 4.3.
But still, you know, low for the last decade.
Yeah.
That's good news, but you see these mass layoffs that came close to 10,000 last year. You're seeing big kind of name employers leaving Wisconsin or laying a lot of people off. So it's a perception issue of, well, this is good, but this is not so good. So Walker's trying to stress the good, which all governors do. Every one I've watched, they try to highlight something good going on in the state.
It's state of the state.
Yeah.
Happy days are, well, the actual line on the media obsession is, reading from the governor's text, while so many in the media seem to obsess with negative stories, you're talking about the layoff notices?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, Kraft.
Lagging job creation. I mean, we're 33rd, 37th, wherever, you know, depending on which, you know, 6 months you look at. We kind of tend to be in that lower third. Those are stories a lot of attention, and Walker's going to highlight the good things in his mind are going on.
J.R., one thing that struck me is this line in the governor's speech: we must value our students who choose to be highly skilled welders, IT technicians, or certified nursing assistants as much as we do those who choose to be doctors or lawyers. And then, were you struck by the number of we need Walmart deli assistants and certified nursing assistants and warehouse employees, but were you struck at the number of those people that he called out and have take a bow?
Well, I think part of it is, and I was talking with Robin Voss about this a couple weeks ago, head of the State of the State, that the skills gap that we have, lawmakers will tell you, or some people will tell you, that if you look at it, part of the issue is we as parents want our kids to go to college and get a degree and go on and do like big and great things, right?
Yep.
But not everybody's cut out for a college degree, and there are great careers in welding, being all these other things, and we're not filling those jobs because maybe we as parents aren't, if you will, valuing or being as boastful about our son or daughter going to welding school as we are about going to medical school. So in their minds, part of the issue is trying to create a value, if you will, of these careers, because we need more people. We have lots of issues in Wisconsin of not being able to fill manufacturing jobs, you know, skilled labor jobs, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's part of the jobs gap. We have these jobs available, but people can't fill them.
And one of the things we talked about is one of his major themes was reforms, excuse me, and there's this line in the speech. We helped transfer 8,334 people from government dependence to true independence. Wisconsin now requires able-bodied adults without children in the home to be enrolled in a job training program. So that's part of, let's think in terms of welders, IT, and some of these. Not everybody's going to be a doctor or a lawyer, right?
Yeah, and part of what he's talking about, the 8,000, is the people who moved off of the assistance into a job. He didn't mention, of course, the ones who failed to get a job and were knocked off of the assistance. But he's, again, this is part of his message of, if you want a job, we're going to help you get a job. But by doing that, we're going to give you independence, get you off of government programs. He used this theme a lot in the presidential trail last year of, I don't value or judge the success, the number of people who are on food stamps, for example, but people who are in a job.
Yep, and you and I, when we monitor State of the State, we look for new initiatives. As we discussed last week, he folded the Affordable College Initiative in there. And then he said, he strongly signaled, I would like my next budget to include self-insurance for health care for state government workers. Let's listen to the governor highlight that proposed change.
Now we need to do more to reform state government and put those savings into public education. One area to consider for real reform is the way we administer health insurance for state employees, which some experts believe could save tens of millions of dollars. Tonight, I commit to investing every penny of savings to the general fund from these specific reforms to support public education.
The idea of self-insurance, J.R., that's very, very controversial. And even Finance Co-Chairman John Nygren said, you know, I used to sell insurance. And Speaker Voss says, if we're going to hurt our existing health insurers, I'm not so sure this is a good idea. But more interesting is, sure, one consultant says you may save $40 million, and you have the governor using carrot and the stick. If we save that 40, I'm going to put it into public education. But another consultant warned it could lose lots of money, right?
Yes, which may be part of the reason why they found the second consultant, you know, to study, if you're a cynic, if you will.
Oh, you cynic, Jim.
But what's interesting is, in talking to people this week about that, there are a few folks, even Republicans, saying, well, Governor, if education is a priority, why is it just now you're talking about finding funding for education? When I've talked even to conservative Republicans, people I consider to be part of the right wing of the party, they've told me the last year, look, we've been spending money on education the last few years, but it's spending money on education to drive down property taxes. I can't keep going home and selling a budget that is all about property taxes and not about giving schools some relief, because they've been kind of like treading water, if you will. And let's face it, costs go up, utilities, all these things are going up, we're keeping them flat to eat on property taxes. That's not something I can sell anymore. So folks going, maybe Walker's coming around the idea of we can't just worry about property taxes, we have to also kind of think about this. This is a priority for people. So that might be part of that. Now the self-insurance thing, there is this question among lawmakers, okay, you're gonna take 250,000 people out of the private market. Mm-hmm. What's that do the rates that you and I pay or our spouses pay for us? Mm-hmm. Might taxpayers save money on one end, but get gouged on the other because their rates go up? Because let's face it, people who are, if you have good folks, by good folks I mean like healthy people in the market, you take healthy people out of the market, there are fewer healthy people to spread around the cost.
The concept is cherry picking.
Yes,
the
so
healthy
that,
people.
That could be a problem. That's what Nygren's talking about, that he worries about that. So I'm not quite sure this idea has got really legs right now with lawmakers. It may end up coming to fruition, but it's still got ways to go.
Well, and also, to touch on another major theme, the governor served notice. I've been to 8, 9, 10 communities. I'm going to come to a community to you soon. So let's listen to him talking about his 2020 vision project.
We're going to visit every part of the state to hold listening sessions throughout 2016. So far, we've held sessions in Seymour, Prairie du Chien, Milwaukee, Osseo, Kewaunee, Sturgeon Bay, and Ashwaubenon. And we plan on coming to a community near you soon. So far, participants have included principals, farmers, small business owners, local government officials, retirees, veterans, teachers, construction workers, union members, parents, high school students, nurses, charitable organization leaders, superintendents, insurance agents, ministers, college students, machinists, law enforcement, and a librarian. This is personal for me, as I think the best way to plan for the future is to hear from people all over the state. We need a shared vision for the future. That is why I want to hear from you. I call it our 2020 Vision Project.
JR, help me understand something. Hmm? He listed 20 professionals who he'd listened to. The only thing missing was, I think, butcher, baker, candlestick maker. Yeah. Why did he throw out 20 specific professionals who he's already heard from on the listening session?
Part of the speech is to show that governor's re-engaged. You know, he came off the campaign trail for president in September, and everything Capitol's been waiting for, the sign of Governor Walker is really back and re-engaged and has a vision. Part of this speech, from what I can kind of pick up from people, is Walker reestablishing himself. Look, I'm here. We're reselling the budget a little bit, because if you recall, he signed the budget in July. The next day, he went the campaign trail. Mm-hmm. Usually, Governor Walker goes out and does like a week-long, you know, like flying around, touting all these things. Part of this was, okay, I missed the opportunity back in July. I'm going to sell some things now. I'm going to show you that I'm out here listening. I'm engaged. I'm paying attention. And this vision thing is kind of like foreshadowing what's to come, that he wants to have a vision for where we should be 20 years down the road, 10, 15, 20 years. And he wants to listen to people, get their input. That kind of hits a thing that Walker noted about Act 10. Remember you said it, his biggest mistake with Act 10 was, I didn't go out and sell it first?
I didn't sell it. I didn't explain it. I didn't justify it.
Yeah, went out and did it. That's what caused the problem. Now, I don't know if he explained it even, it would have avoided what happened, you know, back in 2011. But this is part of the hint of that, of I've got to sell these things before I go do big things. And we're all waiting for what's the big thing from Scott Walker. I get the impression from his folks it's going to be in the next budget, that it wasn't realistic to go, okay, here's our state of the state. We're just off the campaign trail. We're going to go out and say, here are a dozen things you guys got to do before you go home, which looks like to be about a month from now.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew we're just getting kind of teeing things up, if you will, for what's to come down the road.
Speaker Voss used a very intriguing term in terms of Walker reconnecting. He referred to it as a rehabilitation. No, that's his term. I was just amazed. Did the governor take a first step towards rehabilitation with this State of the State speech? What's your takeaway?
In talking to Democrats and Republicans this week, the word that kind of got used more often were things like underwhelming with the speech, that it was kind of, you know. But I think they had higher expectations of what the governor's people thought he could pull off. Again, if he had gone up there and said, do all these things, lawmakers would say, look, we've got a short window. We've got all our priorities we've been working on. You know, we're not going to get a bunch of stuff done. Even his affordability package, right, the college affordability package, has some issues because of the cost.
7.5 million.
So there's that to deal with. So they knew that there's not, you know, there wasn't a lot of money laying around. Maybe just kind of get the groundwork laid, if you will. The big vision thing from Walker will probably come in the budget. So there's people, I get the impression, that they're like, okay, this is part of the process. These are baby steps, if you will. This is not the grand reemergence of Scott Walker. We have some time. Now, don't forget, there's a big election coming up this fall that could dictate which way this country goes. There may be a reaction from Scott Walker because of that. It may give a sign of where we can go as a state.
Yeah.
So there are all these things that are out there that, you know, just kind of sit tight, I guess, is the message from his people. We're going to get there eventually.
Well, the governor gave his State of the State speech on Tuesday, but on Monday, and so he put on the official chief executive hat on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
But on Monday, his campaign sent out this appeal, and it said, we plan on running for a third term. Well, let me just quote two sentences. A re-election campaign may seem like a long way off, but the other side is already gearing up for a bruising battle. The liberals are gearing up for the next election, and we need to do the same. But first, we must pay the last remaining bills. What's he still owing as presidential?
That's a good question. We should get a report end of next week, I think it is due. They'll give a latest update, if you will, on where he stands with the debt that he has. The state account released numbers on Friday last week, amount he had raised and spent. He only had $20,000 in the bank.
He raised 6.4 and is $20,000
for the year.
For the year.
Yeah.
But on January 1, he only had $20,000 in the bank, which is 0.3% of what he raised.
Yeah. And if you look at the money they raised in the last half of the year, more than a third of it, from what I could tell, was transactions involving his presidential campaign, renting his mailing list, renting his website. It's interesting, this is totally geekdom here, but Scott Walker doesn't own his website. His state campaign does. When Scott Walker's presidential campaign wants to use that same URL, it has to pay the state campaign to use it. So these complex campaign finance laws that we have. So he wasn't really raising money the last half of last year, which, you know, be expected a little bit because he's off running for president. If Walker is serious about running for president, or sorry, for governor in 2018, his campaign has to get up and running again. He reshuffled the staff, brought the team back together, if you will, people like Keith Gilkes, Stephen Thompson, RJ,
Johnson,
back being a senior consultant, if you will.
Yeah.
Those folks are back. They're laying the foundation of, if he does run, we're going to be ready. And my bet is that the report due July 15th will look a lot different than one we got last week and will show that he's serious about at least laying the foundation for a run.
Okay, but you use a term, if he does run. Remember his campaign appeal on Monday. A re-election campaign may seem like a long way off, but the other side is already gearing up for a bruising battle. Why do you use the term if, when he's that definitive?
Governor Walker's not going to say in an appeal to people for money, well, I might run, and in case I do, you should give me some money. He's going to tell people that he's engaged because what's the motivation to give him money otherwise? You know, I don't doubt that Governor Walker has an option before him to run for governor in 2018 again, that there could be a path for him. Even though his problems weren't that great last time we saw the Marquette numbers, he still has an avenue, if you will, to reelection. The question he faces, does he burn for it? Does he really want to be governor again for a third term? He said at one time, a year or two ago, that 8-10 years was enough, that he doesn't want to be governor for life. So what may have changed? What will happen next this fall that may kind of shape his vision? So there are all these kind of factors out there that, while I believe he could, I'm not, and from talking to people, they're not 100% convinced he definitely will. It may be part of staying relevant, because the second he says, I'm not running again,
he's a lame duck.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're not going to say that in 2016. We're not done until January 2019.
Okay. New subject. The Senate, I don't know, 9-hour session. They put three important bills on the governor's desk this week. Number one, civil service reform. It replaces the civil service test with resume-based hiring. It ends a practice of longer workers with seniority bumping others out of jobs. Quicker resolution of disciplinary appeals, centralizes hiring. Also, the HOPE agenda, led by Representative Nygren, would fight opiate addiction by requiring doctors to check databases when filling prescriptions or some other provisions, and then cutting off Planned Parenthood from Title X federal funds, $3.5 million. No doubt in your mind, the governor's going to sign these.
Oh, absolutely. Civil service, the key to that bill getting done was Steve Noss kind of saying, okay, there's this thing called Ban the Box.
Yep.
Basically what it says is that if you apply to work for state government on your initial application, they can't ask you up front, do you have a criminal background?
On your initial application.
Now, down the road, that can come up, but the initial screen can't include that. Jim Steinke, Assembly co-author, Majority Leader, wants the Ban the Box provision in the bill. That's the version passed the Assembly. Roger Roth, Senate co-author, wants that provision in. Steve Noss and some others didn't want it. They want to give the administration the option. Now, they're not required to ask. They have the option to ask right now.
Right.
They want to keep that option for them. But what happened was Noss basically told me on Wednesday, it came quite clear to him, the Assembly won't come back, take up the bill if they amend it.
Right,
so your choice is accept this version or it might die this session.
Right.
Given that choice, they went along with, you know, allowing Ban the Box to be in because they like the other changes Republicans do.
Right.
So that's a big thing. With Planned Parenthood, what's interesting is the original version of these bills, which is about the cost of dispensing birth control drugs, Republicans, especially in rural areas, worried it would hit their local clinics. They amended the bill to tailor it so it is only about Planned Parenthood. Now, the Democrats would tell you it raises a constitutional issue about singling them out, treating them differently from other programs. But for Republicans, this took care of the issue of back home, got that resolved. Now it's more of a clean bill, if you will, to them about singling out Planned Parenthood and cutting off their funding between that and Title IX. Title 10.
Right.
About $7.5 million, I think, is somewhere around
I thought it was 3.5. I thought.
But to combine the two of them combined.
Oh, okay.
Costs
yeah.
about
good,
that much money.
Good point. The Senate also sent the Assembly three controversial bills. One of them, there was a 2013 compromise, and it said, if you are detained in a jail for less than 12 hours, you may not be strip searched.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the sheriff said, I attended the public hearing, a sheriff from Sheila Harsdorff's district. Look, these people being held for less than 12 hours, we cannot strip search him, but they're bringing in contraband drugs, weapons. There was a fascinating exchange of back and forth between Milwaukee Democratic Senator Lena Taylor and Van Wongard on this bill, which passed and was sent to the Assembly. Let's listen to a little bit of that back and forth between Senators Taylor and Van Wongard.
Instead, what we have now is that we've come before us to now get rid of the 12-hour rule. And it said, well, because individuals, law enforcement is unable to maintain, and it's been said for public safety purposes, to maintain separate space.
When you first get brought into that common area, in the cell block area, there isn't some magical thing that everybody's safe for 12 hours. That's not how it works. And after 12 hours, you're no longer safe and you have to be searched. We have people that are bringing in syringes and knives and guns and drugs into these areas, and they have not been found by the officers on the street.
You're suggesting that law enforcement needs the tools, and I'm saying they have the tools, and tools are being misused, and don't close your eyes to a $5 million settlement, which was really too small for 74 people who were raped by MPD.
So let's get this back into perspective. This 12-hour thing is what we're dealing with here. We're only specifically dealing with this 12-hour issue. This is not a white thing or a black thing or a male thing or a female thing. This is about the safety of not only officers and the correctional officers and the individuals that are taking data, but it's also for the inmates.
This isn't about a magic 12-hour rule. It's about carving out the ability for there to be protections, especially in a place where we see that there are disparate effects.
So restricting those strip searches from occurring while people are in custody is absolutely the wrong message to send.
Okay, the bill that says you can be strip searched if you're being held for less than 12 hours, that's on its way to the Assembly. We don't know its future there.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, though, is very intriguing. Make fourth OWI, drunk driving conviction, a felony. Now, here's what, I don't think they read the fiscal estimate, JR. Department of Corrections said, I just checked it yesterday, if this bill becomes law, just the impact on the Department of Corrections, we may have to build new prisons. Oh, that they're costly. Annual impact between 97 and, let me get the number right, $129 million more a year. Is this just playing to the campaigns?
Well, drunk driving has been an issue in Wisconsin for eons.
Ever.
And there has been an effort off and on to try and pass a new bill, and it always runs into the cost. The cost is always a problem, which raises a question about how much drinking and driving we're doing in Wisconsin. That'd be that much of a cost. But anyway, what I wonder is, with the new fiscal estimates as well, is there money to do this? Will that dissuade people from doing it? Or they want to bite the bullet and say, look, this is such a social problem, it's worth the money to spend to take care of this issue. That's the rub. You're going to bite the bullet and find the money to do what you want to do.
Well, the 97, the range, the impact is just on corrections. Mm-hmm. You also have a burden on jails, and mm-hmm. you also have a burden on DAs. And how about public defenders?
Oh, yeah.
So you impact all parts of the system. So I don't know if that bill has a future. And then we alluded to it quickly. The second Planned Parenthood bill says they can only bill MA for the actual cost of drugs plus a fee for
dispensing.
Yeah, okay. So next subject, bipartisanship mm-hmm. in the Assembly.
Yeah.
Stop the presses, JR. The Speaker appoints a task force on dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And they hold, I think they had six or seven in-state, and hearings around the state.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally announced their recommendations. And I was pretty amazed you had almost equal number of DNRs there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty impressive package.
Well, this is a priority for Robin Voss. So I would give this package a good chance of passing the Assembly. Now, again, the price tag becomes a question because of the new revenue estimates that we
have.
It's only $2 million, but when you drop down to $70 million,
well, I understand, as we'll get to in a minute, and the college affordability scores out at 7.5.
It's amazing when you just tack one on another and another, it adds up to real money all of a sudden.
And
so
civil service reform, isn't there a price tag on that? Six?
Six, something like that, yeah.
Okay.
We're talking about a little bit of price tag. Eventually, I think it'll get done. It's a question of when and what the price tag that it has, if it can happen this biennium.
Yeah, let's take a quick look at the summary of it. $1 million more to pay for respite care for caregivers, four more dementia care specialists for the smaller counties, a new awareness program for caregivers and employers who may not only have caregivers, but someone showing the early signs of dementia on their payrolls, a pilot program that would train mobile crisis team members about dementia. And Representative John DeMacco has got a proposal, new estate and elder law requirements for attorneys and judges. Now, Mary Chaya said she's a member of finance. This is the Assembly's top priority.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't think it clears this session?
The question is, Senate Republicans seem a little more antsy about spending money than the Assembly does sometimes. That caucus, I don't have a good feel yet what that caucus is on that package and if they're ready for it. That's
well,
the question.
But the number of dementia cases is going to almost mm-hmm. double in 20 years. And baby boom generation needs to be kept aging in place. Three out of every four people in Wisconsin with dementia are living in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's not enough money in federal, state, or local governments to pay for their care in any assisted living.
I'm just saying wait, see how the Senate Republican caucus, when it caucuses, where it gets to on this package. That's the question I have at this point.
Okay. Let's turn to your stock report. Rising.
So Tom Barrett, Chris Abley, we're talking about Milwaukee politics here, but finance reports weren't just due for state candidates last week. You look at the ones for those guys, they have a huge, huge financial advantage over their opponents. These guys both have issues, if you will. Tom Barrett has a crime issue, homicide spiking. Abley has an issue where his support isn't really deep and passionate. He's got some connection issues, if you will, for voters. But they have the resources, they can kind of paper over that and kind of bombard their opponents with all kinds of things. By the way, ably. There's a new 501c4.
You reported that
this
today.
This morning, Dan Adams, attorney in Milwaukee, is running.
Yeah.
Might get into the issues, if you will, in Milwaukee in that race. That's not going to be a bad thing for him to help out with TV. So the question kind of is, can Chris Larson with Abley, or these couple of alders with Barrett, okay, can they gain traction somehow? With Larson, would unions, specifically public employee unions, pony up enough money to match what Abley can dip in his own pocket and spend? If they did, would they have any success? Big question there. Alderman Donovan, he was the best fundraiser of Barrett's opponents. Can he find traction from somebody else? But let's say the city of Milwaukee is not really a hospitable place for a Republican. So while Barrett has his issues, can Donovan ride? That's a tough road to hoe right now, especially when the guys are incumbents are doing well financially.
Okay. Mixed, Mandela Barnes.
So we talked a little bit last week. Look at the reports. He had a 4-1 cash advantage on Lena Taylor at the end of 2015.
The issue here is whether he's going to challenge.
Run her against her primary. Now, Lena raised more money than Mandela by a good part, but she also spent most of the money she raised. Had a couple of donations from the PAC associated with Wisconsin Builders and Realtors, tend to give to Republicans. Also support joint finance members on occasion, so that's not a big surprise. But the question kind of becomes, all right, they're jockeying for position. Who has a better grassroots operation? What's going to happen if Mandela does get in? Will SSDC, the Senate Democrats, their campaign committee, will it feel compelled to defend Lena in a primary challenge? Oh, by the way, SSDC wants to spend money on the open 18th district, on Tom Tiffany up in the 12th Republican.
Gudex, Tiffany, Harsdorf.
It would rather spend money elsewhere, but if you have an intra-party fight, what do you do? There's all kinds of complex issues there. And Lena, don't forget, I mean, the critics of her like to point to her vote for the Castle Doctrine and still carry as vulnerabilities, if you will. But, you know, are those going to be the issues that really kind of sink her as she burned bridges in Milwaukee? Has Mandela been around long enough to kind of take her out? Don't forget, Mandela got elected in 2012. He looks like a promising young member of the Assembly.
Yeah.
And talk to Dems, they worry that if he runs against her and fails, you could nip a budding career, like cut off the knees, if you will. Where does he go from there? Because remember, Milwaukee Democrats don't really leave their seats very often.
That's true.
If he doesn't, so he leaves that Assembly seat, doesn't win the Senate, he could be shut out for a while of state politics.
Okay, and then falling?
State Treasurer. So Matt Adamczyk ran in 2014, promising to get rid of this office. He is one step closer to doing that.
Yes, now, because both the Assembly and the Senate have moved forward a constitutional amendment to the next session. Go ahead.
Now, don't forget, last session cleared the Assembly as well, but didn't go in the Senate.
Right.
What's changed, though, is that I'm talking to folks, there's a different cast of characters in the Senate Republican caucus than last time, people who were maybe not as affectionate for the way we've always done things. And so the officers go, what's left? Because really, there's nothing left to do.
There isn't.
They serve the Board of Commissioner of Public Lands, and that's about it.
Yep.
So it looks like we're one step closer. So now they have to pass it next session as well. Then it goes to statewide referendum for a final vote that would dictate whether this office stays around. It would go away in 2019, I believe. And if it's successful, I will bet you Secretary of State is next.
Yep, I bet. Okay, I want to circle back to two loose ends. Number one, how big of a hit in the LFB report, the Fiscal Bureau report, that we are not going to collect $94.3 million then? That we thought we were going to collect. How big
a deal? You and I have both seen dozens of revenue projections over our careers. This amounts to 0.2% of the total GPR.
Yes.
The state's going to take in, projected to take in through the middle of 2017. So at this point, I see it as don't freak out, but here's a caveat, what could be next? The stock market is a mess right now, all over the place. Is the economy going to soften? If the economy softens, that's when we start getting warning signs.
That's true,
I remember.
That's true.
One of my first budgets in fall of 2000, Tommy Thompson's administration came out and said, we're going to raise, like, have 14 some billion dollars each year the biennium. This is back in 2000, because we were going gangbusters in the 90s. Fiscal Bureau came out in January and said, well, we 300 million less than that. Mm-hmm. They came out in May and said, well, another 300 million less than that. That was like, that's a problem. That's when you see the warning sign of, we get that recession plus 9/11 all came together and boom, the bottom drops out.
Yep. And there were two different news stories on this. So let's just explain. One said there's a surplus of $135 mm-hmm. million. Another said $70 million. That is because $65 million must be set aside for the reserve fund. So that's a difference there. If you're talking about cash available apart from the reserve fund, it's $70 million. If you want to talk about the total surplus, which, of course, the governor is in his press release did, it's $135
million. And let's get really geeky, okay?
Okay.
So when Fiscal Bureau did projections back in July, it thought we'd end the last fiscal year, June 30th, with $300,000 bucks in the bank. That's almost nothing. We ended up with $135 million. So when Walker talks about, hey, the surplus is bigger than we thought it was, well, yeah, but that's not because of growth. That's because of, like, we had more in the checking account, if you will, way back when. So we're in this kind of, we have this very, very narrow cushion. Every budget I've covered, a very narrow cushion. We are okay right now, but the bottom drops out, what's going to happen? And this also impacts things like the college affordability package.
Sure.
Well, people want to spend the $7 million now, not knowing what's going to happen in the next year.
Right.
Well, they want to spend these other couple of
million. Whether any of these drunken driving bills pass.
All those things are going on. And there's also, if you look closely at these numbers, to be even a bigger geek, income tax collections are a big driver when it's going down, right? Part of that is, back in December, Congress extended this
tax deduction for small employers
that we thought was going to expire.
Small businesses, yes.
So there was a hit there.
Made it permanent.
Now, we also, the Walker administration has levers to pull to save money. Part of what offset that hit was that we spent less, or we're going to spend less than we thought we were, because there's all that going on. And oh, by the way, even geekier, this projection doesn't have anything to do with the MA program, medical assistance. If you look at the numbers at the end of December, we had about a $72, $75 million surplus in that fund.
To the good.
Yes. But it's MA.
Yes.
That's all about caseload.
Yes.
And you know, we have a bad month of people getting sick, and that can blow the thing up in a heartbeat. So we're walking this tightrope. That's the bottom line.
That's a good
If you want to
phrase.
Pull it back from geekdom, we're walking a tightrope right now, but we're okay.
Excellent. And then the final thing quickly, you surprised that Reggie Newsom is leaving DWD and going to be replaced by Ray Allen, a veteran of decades in the state government?
Let's see. Allen's been at DFI alone for 19 years.
18 or 19 years.
Joined
and before that, he was DOA.
87, I think he came in under Tommy Thompson, somewhere around there.
Right.
You know, it's Walker had a fairly stable transition from term one to term two in terms of cabinet. Eric Schutz left, chief of staff, but not a big like defection of folks. It's not uncommon. Hipch went to PSC.
Neitzel with the exception of the revolving door at Weedick.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a whole other beast in itself.
Yes.
But as far as like his cabinet, I'm not surprised a couple folks are leaving to do other things because a couple things. One, government work may pay well compared to what you and I can make. But for some of these folks who have like a very desired skill set in the private sector, they can make a lot more money in the private than they can working for the government. So there's that issue. Some of them take a pay cut, if you will, to do this, you know, for a couple of years and go back and do the real job.
Yep.
So it's not a surprise that folks are saying, oh, you know, I've done 3-4 years, it's time to go back and do something else.
As Secretary of DWD, Ray Allen will earn $118,000. That's a living wage.
And I'm pretty sure that Reggie Newsom is leaving. His leaving to pursue other opportunities is different than when Jeff Plaley left to pursue other opportunities.
I understand.
I think there's more if he's going to land well than anything else.
I understand. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 22nd.